Greetings, everyone. This is Christopher Rudy of the Cosmic Love Talk Show here, May 4th today, 2013. And I hope you've been able to pull up the discussion points we're going to go through today on the Cosmic Love homepage there. I had a link where you can pull it up in a separate window. I'll be going through some of that. I'll be having someone come on. Let's just call him our mystery guest here in about 20 minutes. And we'll be going into this more, you know, the philosophy, psychology, you know, reality therapy, I sometimes call it. What's going on with the thinning of the veil right now? What's going on globally? What's going on with the global media and the global media, and, you know, ranging from highly centralized, top-down mass programming of the mass mind with, you know, mainstream media, TV, radio, newspapers, etc., and what's going on with the internet and the decentralized, bottom-up, you might say, grassroots or netroots consciousness of people networked, you know, and social networks within networks on the mother of all networks, the internet. And of course, you know, this dynamic between the internet bringing stuff up that the mainstream corporate media won't touch, and how there's this dynamic tension right now. You might say complementary antagonisms between controlled centralized media and the uncontrolled decentralized media, where freedom of information is still pretty much open to whatever you want to, whatever you want to see or know. It's pretty much out there on the internet, and you get all kinds of controversial perspectives. But some people are savvy at looking at news groups and fields that they're interested in. They could be unified fields that are comprehensive in nature, or they could be highly specialized fields. You can get pretty much whatever you want to know. It's out there. And the dynamic at this point is that with the internet and the evolution of the internet, we've seen it evolve very quickly from, you know, a hardware dominance. You know, IBM, that used to be the corporate mainframe computers, evolved to the desktop computers and the emphasis on software, you know, Microsoft. And we saw then the computer become the network of computers, or the internet as we know it. And that's going through some dramatic changes, and it has created, you might say, this tension between centralized forces of control that have always been one-way programming, and of course the internet is interactive, and interactive and open rather than one-way. It's every which way, and so it's like really the left and right hemisphere of every individual. You know, the left brain is very logical, command and control, and linear, you might say. And the right brain is nonlinear. It's intuitive. It's, you know, basically a spirit of equanimity. It's like the internet. We have the two, you know, you have these, you might say, the two hemispheres of the global consciousness, of the global brain. You've got the left brain, which is the controlled media, and you've got the right brain, which is the nonlinear internet media, which is interactive and decentralized, whereas, again, the left brain corporate media is very much one-way programming rather than interactive. It's command and control versus freedom and opportunity, you might say. And, of course, the idea of an open internet, net neutrality, is the principle which is really coming under attack with all these different congressional bills, which are really corporate control bills. The corporatocracy wanted to kill the internet, and so far, you know, it hasn't killed it. We've got surveillance out the kazoo, but that goes with everything: telephone calls, you know, internet. And I'm not going into a paranoid thing here. It's just the reality is that there are watchers. There are watchers from the left brain, and there are watchers from the right brain. I mean, when I say that, you know, you've got watchers above, and you got watchers below. We know the expression of watchers as far as beings of light and the ascended masters you know, and the cosmic hosts of heaven, you know, stepping through the veil and basically connecting with the collective consciousness of humanity and individuals and overshadowing them. And so there's the higher watchers, and then there's the lower watchers. There's the watchers, you know, and when I say, you know, people that, you know, in the name of terrorism, we got all these surveillance laws. And so, you know, everyone in the United States has got dossiers on them. And there may be, the CIA may have a brochure-sized folder on you, you know, a small packet of information, or they may have a skid load of stuff on you. And it's just the nature of the beast, you know. There's all these different compartmentalized components to self and civilization. You know, I mean, you've got the holodeck that everyone is in individually and collectively. You know, between our ears, there's the upper brain, lower brain, left brain, right brain, forebrain, rear brain, and that creates a field. And in the same way, there's a field in the collective consciousness of the Earth. You've got the left hemisphere of the Earth, Western civilization, the Eastern hemisphere of the Earth, Eastern civilization. In the West, we read with our languages, we read from left to right, left brain to the right brain. And in the Oriental Eastern civilizations, they read their calligraphy, you know, from right to left. And it's really amazing when you think about it. But the energetics of the planet are holographic, like the energetics in the brain, you know, in the two left and right hemispheres of the brain. And the laws of the holographic universe are written in our inward parts, like just like a cell in your finger has the DNA, you know, for the blueprint for the whole body. And just as you can do a photograph of the eye with iridology, and you can see the blueprint for the whole body in the eye, all the organ systems of the body. And this was taught in the Harvard Medical Schools in the 1920s, and they stopped teaching that because anybody could do it, and medicine became like a religion where you, you know, I'm not going to get under that rap right now, but drugs for symptom medicine is pretty much the prevailing system now. But with the internet, you have a whole other system that's emerging. And that is, for any health condition, you can check databases and support groups and information for what's working best, whether it be homeopathic, naturopathic, chiropractic, allopathic, or some eclectic combination. You can go there for holistic healing with the internet, and it's just amazing, you know, what a tool it has become. A strength with in excess individually or with like the internet, a strength in excess can be a weakness. And it's the same thing with the controlled media. A strength in excess, you know, the power they have to control, you know, the media, the mass mind, in excess becomes tyranny. But it's the same thing with the right hemisphere and nonlinear internet information. A lot of people look at the internet and it's like, if your mind is too open, your brains fall out. And then if you know, if you don't have a comprehensive way of looking at the internet as a tool and a resource with intent to apply it, you know, for greater service, then the internet can be, it's so wide open, you can lose yourself in it. And, you know, many people do. You get Facebook addicts, you get people addicted to all kinds of different gaming on the internet. I mean, you know, whatever you're into, it can become a fixation and an addiction. Any strength in excess, any, you know, is an addiction, you might say. The idea is that we all tend to work off of our strengths, but the balance point, you know, the concern is how to bring that in without excess, bring that into fruition, manifestation without excess. So I'm going to come back to this subject today, the business of evolution, monetizing the next big thing or the big shift at this time. I've been referring to it in a lot of my writings and the Cosmic Love shows a lot about the big shift, the shift in consciousness, the thinning of the veil, what's going on with galactic alignment, what's going on in the unified source field, the quantum field, the energetics of our, you know, solar system, our planet, what's going on in our consciousness with as a function of galactic alignment. And I've gone into great detail on that before, so those who have listened know what I'm referring to. But the concept is that right now, with thinning of the veil, we're getting a lot of stuff coming out of the woodwork, coming out in the media. They're global issues. They're issues that affect all of us, and people all over the world are tuning into what's going on in America, what's going on in government, what's going on with the global economy. We're all in this thing together. You know, it's like the family of man in a global village. So there are dynamics. If you take the progression of the computer internet revolution, as I mentioned before, from hardware, software, and netware, the next phase or the next big thing, the next stage is I refer to as heartware, as an interactive interface for mass-to-mass communication. You know, how 100 or 1,000 or a million people can respond to the same YouTube video at the same time to create a unified field response with a little diagram that shows that response with three numbers sequence that create a dot and a cube and the collective field of that in a 3D cube as a function of these dimensions that you input as corresponds to your first impression from upper brain to lower brain, you know, whether it's above you, below you, or from the second dimension would be like from left brain to the right brain, whether it's linear, logical, or nonlinear, emotional, or if it's too emotional or too unreasonable. You know, there's a whole dimension there, like between Spock and Scotty in Star Trek with Captain right in the middle of that spectrum. You know, Scotty was real emotional, and Spock was real intellectual, but there's that balance point in that second dimension. Third dimension being depth of field, you might say, of meaning, of value, and purpose at any one moment, you know, kind of a synthesis of the first two dimensions. So those three numbers in the sequence on a 1 to 10 scale and how that all works, I've been explaining that as heartware or cultural DNA and how that would work as the universal interactive interface that people could use on their smartphones, iPads, you know, as a kind of a way of, you know, or off your computer, you're out using your alphanumeric keyboard on your computer, how that would work for people to be interactive on a mass scale to qualify different highlights of any video program. To provide your input, you know, you might say an electronic upgrade of voting. You know, we have a horse and buggy legislative system that was designed hundreds of years ago, and it's been completely co-opted in Congress, you know, what we've got now. But a vision of this alone could be a catalyst for self-fulfilling prophecy, how this would work to involve and evolve our individual and collective consciousness. You know, consciousness with how we, you know, recycle general knowledge to generate specific wisdom. You know, consciousness with a conscience, you know, a capital C. So, I've people that have listened to me been reading what I've been writing recently and about a cultural DNA and how this would work, how a mass-to-mass telecom could work to involve and evolve our individual and collective consciousness with the conscience. And the processes of consciousness, the learning process, the creative process, how those are a function of this process that could be applied to interactive mass communications and to culture unity and communications with, you know, culture and conscientious common sense as a process of co-creation or cooperation, cooperation with a model of standards for this interactive interface. And that concept of a model of standards that really is the language of light itself, natural law language of light, you know, like the white light of the infant and eternal hits the prism of human consciousness and refracts into all the colors of the rainbow. And that scale of brightness from the infinite and eternal, you might say, is like the light of consciousness from the pineal gland at the top of the brain to the reptilian brain, you know, at the base of the brain, the R complex. You've got a whole scale there, and that scale is like that first scale I was mentioning, and those three numbers in sequence that creates a dot and a cube for response to YouTube videos that could create a dimensional frame of reference at any one moment of a YouTube video, you could say the program was above you or below you. It's too authoritative, sophisticated, too bright, you might say, or too simplistic and childlike, or just dumb, dark, you know. So you have a brightness scale as the first dimension. Well, that white light hits the prism of human consciousness and refracts into all the colors of the rainbow. And you've got, you know, the whole spectrum from left brain to right brain, linear, logical, lockstep, letter of the law, and the excess would like too much like Spock. And the other extreme would be fiery, emotional, you know, unreasonable, too emotional, in the extreme like Scotty can get on Star Trek, that example. So, and then you have, of course, in each of these dimensions, you have the balance scale. On a 1 to 10 scale, you would have the ends of the scales being the 1, which is a sense of separation from the spherical consciousness, the circle, you know, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10 goes into the center, but instead of a 1-0, you just put in a 0, and that represents the balance point on each of the three scales. So, as a you can probably visualize this as I'm explaining it, because, you know, everyone knows that it had just a little bit of math. The three numbers in sequence can be like an X, Y, Z coordinate axis, you know, a vertical, horizontal, and depth dimension axis, like 3D, that references a dot in a cube. And that's a little 3D graphic you'd have in a little corner of your screen that could actually show on a real-time basis where people, when people are responding at different points of the program, and you can respond at the same time, and what the field of the collective consciousness is in those three dimensions. And, of course, this language of light of consciousness, or language of light as consciousness, just working with it and by using it, you learn how to use it and become conscious of how you are conscious. And that concept of becoming, you know, like a feedback loop with consciousness, the individual and collective consciousness, is seeing how that outpictures and evolves, and see how your evaluation at any one point can be part of a field to where you could go back at the end of the program, watch the YouTube video again, and see where most of the response is, check out the response so that the context and meaning at any one time gives a field of consciousness, you might say. The unified field, you'd be able to see how your blinking red dot that you entered relates to the field of dots of the collective consciousness, and whether everyone else is unbalanced from your perspective or vice versa. You know, and like in the four, on any one of the scales or the three scales in combination. So it's, you know, or any of the quadrants, like you have a whole field of dots or response up in one of the quadrants of the cube, and your dot's blinking in another quadrant. Well, what does that say with the context and meaning about how you're separate from everyone else, whether you think everyone else is wrong and you're right, or whatever? It just gives a point of perspective of the collective consciousness that would basically highlight for each individual and for the collective, you know, the collective consciousness, to be able to highlight where, how the context meaning at any one point is either centering and connecting the field with a common sense, you might say, that's centered and connective and in balance, or not. So basically, the concept of information's ecology, how you could recycle general knowledge to generate specific wisdom, follows from this concept of how anyone could create a YouTube video, people could respond, someone else could then create a new video showing where the most response was and the context and meaning of the video at that time and what that means as far as bringing more light of consciousness, of light as consciousness, to that context and meaning at any one part of the video. So this is the communications leaders of tomorrow, the leaders of tomorrow, period, will be communicators. The children that grow up to learn these tools, you know, how to create a, you know, a lot of kids do this. A lot of kids are creating YouTube videos and editing them and creating, adding graphics, etc. And the real leaders, with the vision of what this will look like, with people being able to create, you know, it's like freedom of speech, you create a YouTube video. Freedom of assembly, people can assemble, respond to it. Again, freedom of speech, someone else can create another video showing how we all assembled and what we had to say collectively and how the context and meaning then could be highlighted And a true leader then could create, highlighting the highlights in the way that there's just more light, there's more consciousness, there's more awareness of what the cause and core issues are, and within those issues, where there's
Dennis online too,
and where there's not. So I could go on with this a little bit. I'd have our mystery guest that's just come on. Dennis, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Are you there?
Yeah. And the question is, where are we?
But you've been talking about where are we is a good question.
I kind of took off with this and just went freeform because I do the linear stuff, with my articles all the time, and I go into a lot of this stuff, and some people are up on it, know what I'm talking about. They want to hear the same old reading from the script. So I thought I'd go a little nonlinear before you came on. And for those who are listening, Dennis has been on the show numerous times. He was an associate professor in philosophy at a junior college out in California. He's been involved with the natural foods industry and the preparedness prepper industry for about 30 years. And Dennis and I have been longtime friends, having both had health food stores at the beginning of our careers, and worked with natural foods, for much of our careers. And so Dennis he's got a good perspective on what's going on, with the prepper markets. That goes in bursts every time there's a burst of bad news in the mainstream media. Things get scary. Typically, there's at least a small surge in the prepper markets. People want to get ready for whatever. And Dennis, give me a read on that. What have you been seeing lately?
Here's something that may somewhat tie in with what you're talking about, in terms of consciousness evolving and where we're going to go and what it's going to look like. One of the questions is, when the average guy on the street, where is he going to really know what's going on in the world? I'm not talking about in meditation or that sort of thing.
Fox News.
Yeah, like it or not, in the world, not of the world. So here we are. We are in the world, and one of the big deals that I've talked about in my classes, and you talk about the whole preparedness thing, is where is reliable, honest information going to come from? The mainstream media is out, in my opinion, is out of the question. And Fox News has their twist, but it's not just what you're hearing; it's what you're not hearing.
Yeah.
And nobody is going to report on certain things, whether it be Fox News or definitely the other media. So here we sit wondering what is going on in light of this evolution and in light of changes in the world. And my whole background, I'm asked this all the time, because when I talk to people, who do you trust? Where do you get the information from that you formulate your worldview? How do you know what's going on at this point? Do you have the discernment skills to know the truth from the lie, and on and on? And so they'll ask me, well, okay, so where do I go? And I could ask you, where do you go? And at this point, it appears, after many years of reading and listening to certain people on the internet, I don't listen to anything in television. It just
good for you.
Yeah, seriously. You know that. We just don't know. So there's got to be maybe just a handful of, and you've got to be thankful for the whole internet anyway, that people have been able to, report things as they see them. I mean, just even you reporting what you see in conversations you have. Okay, so you're a source for that. So who else out there does somebody trust? And that becomes a big question during this whole process.
Yeah,
is how do we develop the discernment skills to know we're not being fooled? Because everything you're talking about, consciousness, evolution, and all of these things, being able to discern what's going on, the dark side isn't sitting still. there's going to be a lot of deception and delusion thrown at us. And during this transition, the question is, how does a person discern when they're being deceived or deluded? And that's the big question, I think, that needs to be in the prepper. And how does it relate to the whole preparation situation? As something we talked about, and it's very interesting. There are people out there who are focused on family, on spiritual growth, on doing the right thing, helping their neighbors, being prepared for anything, whether it be a tornado or whether it be a financial collapse or who knows what.
Yeah.
And so they're doing that. And then there's folks that really their focus is catastrophe, the end of the world as we know it.
Yeah. And they're looking forward to it because they're looking forward to it because they've racked up all their credit cards and they've borrowed against the house. And they've put all their money in their ground or their shelter, and there are people like that, and really want to hoping some disaster will come where the economy will collapse so they won't have to pay back their credit cards.
They have a vested interest
in their own BS belief system.
Absolutely, vested interest, and the big issue is in communication with all of this. These people are looking for validation. It's sometimes some of the groups it's easy to talk to. They are discerning. You look at it and okay, that's interesting. Others don't want to hear anything that doesn't fit in with this ideology, and whether it be political or whether it be the whole prepper issue, whatever. There are some people who have a horrendous vested interest, and I'm not a fortune teller. I'm not going to say here and predict that
what's
sure
gonna
enough,
happen.
The asteroid is around the corner, the pole shift is imminent, and everything is going to totally turn on its head. I don't know. I have read so many different perspectives on what's going on. It's fascinating. I am not as tuned in to the catastrophic side of life, because I think everything you've talked about and we've talked about attitude. I have a spiritual perspective to this and a biblical perspective, and I put my trust in the higher level.
It's all in divine order, and man has free will. Anything is possible. And something's definitely going on that's beyond the control of anyone. I mean, when I say that, it's the thing of the veil, energetically, the mass awakening, some people call it, a new level of discernment where people are seeing through BS belief systems that they didn't see through before, that there are agendas that they didn't realize before, things going on. People are waking up to all kinds of stuff. And I think that a lot of that is that it's just like when you walk into a room the curtains are pulled and it's kind of there's a little light in there and everything looks clean and neat, but you flip the light on and you see all the dust on everything. And this is what's going on. People, there's an enlightenment going on and people are seeing the dust on everything. They're seeing all kinds of problems.
The question we always have, of course, is during this, I'll call it what you want. I don't know, maybe you have a good word for it. Transition from the way things are now to this enlightenment, people seeing the truth, people being called at a very deep level to see what's going on. One still wonders what this transition looks like. The worm, the cocoon, it doesn't necessarily look so hot. The butterfly is beautiful. But the worm is the worm, and the cocoon can look pretty weird, and the butterfly is beautiful. So what's the cocoon look like here while we're in this kind of this
gray gunge stage inside the cocoon?
Yeah.
It's all kind of dissolved, and the imaginal cells
it looks
are starting
pretty gross
to take shape.
In there.
So there's a
but boy, we know what the other side is going to look like. We just don't know quite what it's going
to how to get there.
What
yeah,
experience in this. And the things that you were mentioning is kind of on, I don't know if you termed other side, down the line, this may all come to pass, but I just wonder, what it looks like on the way there.
Well, you know, nobody knows exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I really believe that a lot of the dynamics are from the inside out. That this, what I understand is a bioenergetic surge in the source field that carries intelligence and morphs our DNA. You might say it's cultural DNA at the quintessential, you know, field level, energy field level. There's a DNA that's morphing the collective consciousness grid. It's happening from the inside out. And this is all ordained for this time. If you look at the evolution of civilization and, you know, on the earth and the souls on earth and the soul expressions and manifestations that's happened, you know, throughout history, just this last 100 years, you look at the technological evolution and the conscious evolution and the ability to process information and become more conscious of how, you know, we are as a global civilization and what the problems are and what the solutions are and what's going on with this thinning of the veil. It's like a neurotransmitter someone would take. You know, neurotransmitters are sometimes called psychotropics because they make the brain function more, you know, the brain neurons, synapses connect. They're transmitters. They're neurotransmitters. An example of this, and this is, you know, this is kind of an analogy of what's going on, but it's, you know, it's a physical analogy, but it's, if you take the active euphoric ingredient in the herb, you know, THC or tetrahydrocannabinol, it's a neural transmitter which makes the brain cell connections work better. And this biological fact is well documented, but it's politically incorrect because it's economically challenging to all kinds of big business from big oil, big timber, big pharma. So it's rarely mentioned in big media, which is sponsored by these big monopolies. So the interesting thing here is, and this is the point I was going to make, neural transmitters increase the sensitivity of the neural networks within the brain. So this naturally increases susceptibility to suggestion, including auto-suggestion. So if you seriously believe it will make you sick or make you well, you're right.
Yeah.
In other words, it
you
makes you more
you
susceptible
you
to the suggestion. Huh?
So you are what you think you are. But here,
there you
here's
go.
A question I have for you. Maybe you can elaborate on this a little bit. Let's look at it from the timing point of view. Inside and out, there's this transition going on. Inside, you're right, people are all over the place are tuning into this. Our local community up here in Nevada City, Grass Valley, here in Northern California, very tuned-in community. I'm very impressed by it. There's a lot of folks growing their own gardens, doing crafts, or self-reliance. So there's this, it's happening. You can see it around you. Now, this is great in small communities like this. So here's the question. When you look out there and you see all the nonsense and the deception and delusion, all this sort of thing, is there going to be some kind of a triggering event that as more and more people are opening their eyes and seeing what's going on, are they going to get to the point where they say, my goodness, look at all this, as you say, BS out there. We've been fooled. We've been lied to. We've been indoctrinated for so long. This is it. It's come to the end of the line. Is there a triggering event, or this is going to be a slow evolution? Is this around the corner?
The fact is, this can happen, the mass awakening. I mean, you know, it's like critical mass. The 100th monkey effect. It can go mainstream at any one time, and people at their own sense of separation don't even realize it. When you're separate from, in other words, I know this is going on with people all over the planet that I'm on their specific news group on different email feeds, different websites, different Facebook networks that I tie into. See, I kind of keep my finger on the pulse of the collective consciousness that I'm following. This is going on now, and it has happened with a lot of people who are really plugged in, you might say. And this dynamic, though, is the dynamic that every soul on Earth is going through right now as they contemplate, I mean, those who are connecting with the global noosphere, the global mind, the global network, the web of consciousness, the web of light, the Antaka Karana, they used to call it in the East. You know, this whole web of consciousness, you know, what we do to the web, we do to ourselves. That was Chief Seattle, you know, the web of life. And, of course, this is what ecology movement's all based on. You know, what we do to the web of life, we do to ourselves. We poison our environment, and we poison ourselves. Well, this is what's going on in the collective consciousness. It's the old Cherokee Indian story where the grandfather's talking to his grandson, saying to the grandson, you know, there are two wolves within you. One is evil, mean, cruel, and terrifying, and the other is peaceful, kind, and inspiring. And the grandson asks, well, which one wins? And grandfather says, the one you feed.
Yeah, that's great. I like that illustration.
And
that's good. I don't know. I'm wondering, and all these things that you're in touch with, people you're hearing about it. I mean, some may say, well, this is all underground, so to speak. It hasn't gone overground yet. The overground is all this nonsense and illusion and everything. When does the underground make an effect on the overground? To the point where we wake up, or do we wake up one day and suddenly we see some movers and shakers transformed? Is somebody going to suddenly get up there and say, this is it already, enough is enough? Is Monsanto and DuPont and
GMOs and fluoride and chemtrails
are they going to be taken over, or are the stockholders going to suddenly say, my goodness, what are we doing to our planet? I don't know. I just wonder how all this may, of course.
There's basically two scenarios that you can take your pick of that the collective consciousness is choosing as we speak, whether they're going to go in that direction. One is that, you know, it's really the story like Jonah and Nineveh. You know, he goes to the people and saying, you're corrupt as hell. You know, you either get your act together or it's curtains, you know. And they all repented, and he was really angry at God.
What is it, First or Second Chronicles, is a big deal among the Christian community, pointing to what needs to be done in light of all of this nonsense and evil and such that's going on, is that prayer. And it's a prayer to basically repent.
Yeah,
it's for believers.
Which is basically
self-correct. A true believer needs to repent and look at their role in all of this. So what are they doing? It's causing this. And then God says, okay, well, good. You have repented. You have turned from your evil ways. You've prayed and so forth. And we'll buy you a little more time. And anyway, so you're right. That's a big deal right now in the Christian community, because there's very little people feel that they can do other than pray or personally change. And I think that's what you're saying.
Well, in the spiritual community in general, there are people all over the world in every religion that understand that we're all connected, and that either that civilization as an organization, you know, global civilization as an organization, either we eliminate the insanity, either we repent or self-correct. Either we self-correct and turn around from the insanity of wars for profit of a few, for a disease care system that profits from the creation and treatment of disease. This kind of insanity that, you know, from turn around from petrochemical use of fuels that are poisoning the air and the water, you know, and just to the environment, when we've got free energy technology that's being frickin' covered up and, you know, kept from the people because for the profit and control of, again, a very small power elite. And either we turn around from that, or we are destroying our own life support support systems. We're killing ourselves, and it's just like we could create a heaven on earth with the type of abundance, you know, and that would check and balance, you might say, all the inordinate misqualified energies of hate and hate creation and just insanity and systems that support it, whether we're talking about, you know, big media or big government, you know, when all these institutions are based on it's called biomimicry, based on natural life processes, there's checks and balances for our own survival, you know, biological health and survival. And this is, you know, we're right at that point where a lot of people realize it's just insane. I mean, it's got really crazy. We're destroying our own, you know, life support systems. And what's with the chemtrails in the air and the fluoride in the water and the GMOs that are, you know, destroying the genetic integrity, the future of humanity, because, you know, they carry on for generations. And most people in America now are eating their body weight in GMO grains every year now. I mean, there's no future in that. I mean, it's like a self-destruct path. And what it, you know,
so it's
what
almost
does it
like
take?
This transition has got to. I mean, it's starting already, but
yeah.
we got to overcome the kind of initiative, the inertia that's already been put into place by all these people you just mentioned.
Yeah.
I mean, is there enough energy, enough fortitude, enough whatever, enough people praying to on their knees?
Well,
that's the question. I don't know.
You know, it's like Sodom and Gomorrah. It only takes five good people in our global village, you know, right
now.
Yeah,
I couldn't find them.
You know what I mean? Five good people in our village. There wasn't five. And a lot of people are turning to stone already. I mean, you know, it's like white sepulchres of chalk, you know, the hardened hearts, etc. But, you know, all that fundamentalist belief system aside, I mean, I really believe religion is important, but too much is sometimes worse than none at all. Matter of fact, I have a quote by old Benjamin Franklin. He said, religion is indeed a principal thing, but too much is worse than none at all. The world abounds with knaves and villains, but of all knaves, the religious knave is the worst. And villainies acted under the cloak of religion are the most despicable.
Yeah, well, sometimes, unfortunately, our languaging is not too good. And religion is given a bad name. And really,
the spirituality.
A relationship with the divine. And that's what we all seek. But people make up for it by religion. By dogma, by all of these rituals that really have nothing to do with our relationship with our Creator or with the divine.
It's true. It's, when I say a strength, I was earlier in the show, I was talking about a strength in excess is a weakness. And any belief system, you know, people believe in something and then it becomes a habit and then they get addicted to it, you know, and addicts, you know, you can have all kinds of addicts. You can have, you know, food addicts and TV addicts and Facebook addicts, and you know, and it may have been a good thing at the beginning, but you know, the addiction part of it is what I call a belief system that's stuck, a belief system in excess, and it's like BS when I say in excess. That's what I'm referring to. So the concept is, you know, to believe nothing. You know, the worst enemy of intuitive knowing is, of a wise nature, is typically one's BS in excess. You know, too much of a, and well, it's like when I was talking about neurotransmitters. A TV is like a drug for a lot of people. You know, they watch it and they, you know, for a feel good, and they get brain entrainment going, and you know, they get into it like a dream, like a, you know, like their imagination, and it makes them more susceptible to suggestion. Whatever they're watching, if they're watching Fox News, they're going to be just filled with that. There's, you know, terror, horror, and the need for, you know, government intervention in our lives because of the craziness of a few people that they focus our attention on. You know?
Well, if they watch MSNBC or CNN, they're long gone.
Yeah.
There isn't anything left.
Well, yeah, and a lot of people are
any discernment at all.
And a lot of people are waking up to the fact that the CIA has been embedded in a lot of the corporate media for a long time. I mean, it's just it goes back to Operation Mockingbird. You know, they found out that they can basically, there's all kinds of ways they can program the mass mind through removal of information they don't want them to know and focusing on information they do want to know, like a Pavlovian experiment, you know, where they do stimulus and response, and it's like the shock and awe, you know, after 9/11, the Iraq attack, you know, when they went into Iraq, how they use shock and awe terror to fixate people on policies whereby the government, you know, is leading us through crisis that they created.
Yeah, great. You create the crisis, and then, by the way, here's a solution for it. Oh,
yeah.
Great. You both create it, and you can solve it.
Yeah,
that's wonderful. We need to get in line on that one.
And you know,
yeah,
that's,
it's an interesting time in which we
that's
live.
An interesting,
I see all
analogy.
Of this. Pardon?
Yeah, that's an interesting analogy. You know,
yeah,
because
yeah.
It's the dialectic it's referred to. You know, problem.
Yeah, exactly. It's
and what we never hear about, we hear about the dialectic in philosophy, or you know, in you know how they you know you create a problem, manage a problem, you know, solve the problem in the direction that you the way you define the problem, and that the dialectic of moving things towards totalitarian control, you might say, or you know, more control, less freedom. You know, basically suspension of core constitutional freedoms, you know, how that's been going on. A lot of people have woke up to that, and the opposite of that was what I was referring to with universal self-care in my one linked article and the information I provided regarding the highlights of the show and cultural DNA. Both of them do the same thing of you know, taking an issue with the problem, like with a YouTube video, someone creating a video on a problem, people evaluating that, that's like the solution as far as bringing light, bringing collective consciousness to the video, and their evaluation criteria will define basically, you know, I was going into explaining how that works, you know, origination of program, evaluation of program, then originating a new program that incorporates the evaluation from before, to where people can see, take the context and meaning of on at different points on any issue and really bring collective light, collective consciousness to that context and meaning, to where there's more awareness of what you might say, you know, the highlights of every issue are, and how the collective consciousness is, you know, responds to that. And of course, it's all based on what the context, you know, and meaning at any one point is from a collective perspective, but how each individual relates to that. I mean, if you think of, if we were going to upgrade our horse and buggy legislative systems and core freedoms in the electronic age, I mean, we're in the space age now, but we still have a horse and buggy system. If we were to upgrade all that with, you know, a communications technology that would culture a real community, not pseudo-community, but, you know, a community of conscience, and basically involve and evolve our individual and collective consciousness, that process alone, as far as what that would do to culture social conscience in our social networks, in our global village, you know, the understanding of how that would work, that it would work, and the technology is basically installed and operational, you know, all over the world. Like my son was telling me, he was in a place in Michigan where the whole high school had iPads. Everyone in the high school had an iPad. They were connected with, you know, the world with an iPad and with their classroom and with their teachers, but all over the world, you know, phones, smartphones now have the power of the computers they use to put a man on the moon. You know, a single smartphone now.
Yeah,
I know that sounds crazy, but we have an infrastructure worldwide where we're all one technically and can connect, but how to connect you might say, in the global brain, you know, globally, or in social networks, to create a mastermind alliance so that we can bring wisdom to any issue collectively. You know, bring more light to the subject, so to speak. You know, the concept
well,
of
wisdom and discernment and intelligence has not evolved at the same rate that technology has. So you
that's
have
right.
Incredible technology. And
that's right.
People are communicating and on, but so what? If they don't have any discernment skills, or they're pretty much brainless and indoctrinated.
Well, there's divide and conquer, and there's unity. You know, unity conscience. You know, there's unity and diversity, and there's division of unity. The system we have now has everyone pretty much divided and conquered. Or, you know, when I say that, there is a lot of social networking going on where certain, you know, we're at, right on the threshold of a whole new generation of social conscience and social networks. And social media has created amazing levels of connecting from LinkedIn to other, you know, connecting with people of like interest where there's wisdom thing going on. But discernment, you're right. See, this comes back to, you know.
That's been my favorite word for so long. Is it how do people discern the truth from the lie, you know, good from evil? In without discernment skills, we're.
Well, it's like the first gift of the Holy
Spirit. By our nose, the ring in our nose. I mean, we just don't know, and that's.
It's like the first gift of
the
Holy Spirit. All the other gifts of the Spirit follow from that one. It's like pure intention. You know, if you haven't got pure intention, you can't focus your attention.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, without discernment.
There's no intention.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how all this unfolds. And so, are you optimist? Are you an optimist, or are you?
I am. I like to see the opportunity with every problem, rather than the problem with every opportunity.
Right. Good.
I mean, you know.
Good. Well, you know, that's right. It's how you see things and how you relate to them, and that's great. So.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen. I think I really do want to believe, and I think part of my BS belief system is that we do all get what we ask for, whether we know it or like it or not. And I would just as well see the good and make it so. And then what's the ultimate good? You know, what's the highest and best good, or what's the highest and best vision for, you know, without which the people perish? You know, how good things can be, and how could we do it? You know, how do we make it so? And then just focus
on that.
Well,
that is the question, the big how, and, you know, you mentioned that wolf analogy there. We have the tendency to want to feed the wrong wolf so much of the time, and there's that the flesh and the spirit seem to have a battle going on within us. And all our indoctrination and our past and our everything else, but then there is a spirit within us that says, well, wait a minute now. There's a better way of doing things and of looking at things and so forth. And there's a constant battle going on within us all the time.
And we've got, you know, we've got some of the most brilliant, enlightened gurus, masters, teachers in history telling us things like, believe nothing from the outer that is not confirmed with the inner voice of conscience. Don't believe your teacher or authority figures or friend or family until you've taken their counsel to heart and weighed it in the balance scales of conscience to see if it tips the scales for failure to serve the best interests of kind men among mankind or balances the scales. Now, that's paraphrasing Gautama Buddha. Believe it or not, I mean, he used different words, but, you know, in contemporary terms, it would be, you know, along those lines. Don't believe anything until you really weigh it in the balance scales of conscience in your heart of hearts, you know, to see if it serves.
Well, that's going to have to be the ultimate decider of what's going on. You're right. I mean, it's you can't find it outside. You can't go to, say, a worldly point of view. It's got to be, you know, the Holy Spirit within that guides the path, ultimately.
Yeah.
That's what you rely on. You rely on that connection, that is in within us all, and for the peace that, yes, that's the right decision, or no, that's not what I'm to do. And that doesn't mean what's, that means for everybody. I mean, what's right for you, oh, yeah, I'm going to go here, I'm going to follow this, I'm going to do that. That's good for you, but it may not be good for the guy next to you. So,
yeah, each to their own, each to their own disciplines of wholeness. I mean, you know, path to being centered and connected. But
yeah, exactly.
The Wolf story.
We are a different place.
We're different strokes for different folks, and that's biologically true with biochemical individuality, as well as it is psychologically. You know, one person's dominant Jung archetype. You know how they basically look at the whole world. Whether it's spiritually, mentally, emotionally, or physically, you know, the four archetypes of Jung, as far as gateways, you might say, to the collective conscience, you know, how we portal through life, you know, how we window into, what's your dominant archetype and your adjacent archetype. There's all these, modern profiling tools that are out there that are all based on that. They're based on the same, archetypal Jung principles. With different word association models, but it's all based on the same universal cosmic, that Jung tapped into and was, defined modern psychology. And it's unique to each individual. And, one thing that's
right.
common to them is that we know that, it's like with the wolf you feed, whether it's the good wolf or the bad wolf, so to speak, is what gets your attention. And if there's not this being centered and connected on the inner with that peace and harmony, there can be no abundance on the outer. It'll suffer the sense of separation, if there's not that inner abundance.
About 30 seconds.
So, anyway, I think we've gone on about an hour. Dennis, I'm going to have to do a wrap. I want to thank you for coming on today.
Okay, hey, great. Good luck, and wish you well, and let's keep our eyes open.
Keep our eyes open, and thanks everyone for listening.
Keep our hearts open. They open the eyes of your heart and your mind, and go for it. Okay,
thanks for coming in, Dennis. Everyone listening, look forward to catching you again here in a couple of weeks. Bye for now.